wonderful guy in church came to me afterwards and he said, don't worry about the painting, I'll sort that out for you. So we bless the Lord for his provision. So just to recap, the way the Lord has already provided for us, a donor in church came to see us a while back and said he would put 250,000 rand into our pot, so to speak. So that is a little 250,000 rand there at the bottom. And for every 250,000 rand on top of that, the church raises, he would sponsor another 250,000. So that takes us up to, you just click there one more, thanks Kevin, 750,000 rand, which leaves us with 100,000 rand to go. Next one, Kevin, thank you. So in total, the church in essence needs to raise 350,000 rand. That's our goal. That's what I shared with you last time, 350,000 rand. The good news is, in the last month, about 100,000 rand has come in. So let's give the Lord thanks for that. So that came from four donors. So we've got about 3 months to go, just under 3 months to go, to raise the balance of 250,000 rand. So from, let's go to our message for this morning. I hope you enjoyed this picture. I actually didn't come up with this picture. I told Borja, I need a picture of a guy that looks proud. So apparently this guy looks quite proud. I think he looks quite proud, don't you think so? He looks quite strange as well. So we're going to be speaking about the pitfalls of pride. And actually what we're busy with is, as I've shared with you, we are busy with a series called Hearts Under Construction. As we're constructing in the natural, the Lord has challenged us to consider our hearts. And the thing that he said to me is, as he's busy constructing in the natural, he wants to come and do a work in our midst, in our hearts. And so we've had a couple of sermons around this Hearts Under Construction theme. And our key passage for this series has been 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 5. It says, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it's not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. And so Paul speaking to the church in Corinth, and we've given the context a couple of times around that. And then here in chapter 13, he's unpacking this concept of love, which happens to be our main theme for 2018 from Pastor Heinrich. And so we ask ourselves, what does it mean to be known for love? Practically, yeah, in Franschhoek, what does it mean to be known for love? As Shofar Franschhoek, how does this valley, how do the people around us, how should they experience the fact that Shofar Franschhoek is known for love? And so we've been kind of parking for a while in 1 Corinthians 13 and kind of unpacking this and kind of resting here and trying to understand. Paul is saying love is a couple of things. Love is patient. Love is kind. And then he says love doesn't do certain things. It doesn't envy. It does not boast. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angry. So love is something, but it's also not something. And it also doesn't do certain things. And that's where we're going to stand still this morning. I've done a sermon on the fact that love is patient. I hope you remember that one. That love is not easily angered. And I spoke about putting down the hammer of anger and the fact that we all face those challenges of anger in our lives. And Johnny helped us and we did. The fact that love is not self-seeking, it's not selfish. And this morning we can stand still, the one that's highlighted in gold, the fact that love is not proud. So Paul's saying, you need to understand love, and love is not proud. Then we need to understand what is pride, because we mustn't be proud. So let's look at that definition of pride quickly. Enjoy this one. Pride is a feeling or deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements. That feeling of, I've done it my way, like Frankie said, you know? I've done it my way. And then I think that's where we kind of, if you go to that picture of that guy again, I don't know if he looks, no, not that guy. He was also proud. Two up. We can get to him in a second. This Frankie, I've done it my way. Okay, so that's that feeling of pride. That's how the world defines pride. The fact that I'm standing here and I just want to let you know I did it. Okay? My way. So let's go to to our next scripture for this morning, which is the story in Daniel chapter 4. It's the story about King Nebuchadnezzar. Just go up one, please, Kevin. Thanks. His name's also pronounced Nebuchadrezzar, apparently, which is, I don't know why parents would call their children things like that. But Nebuchadrezzar or Nebuchadnezzar, I think they thought, let's give our boy a strong name that people will remember. And he certainly did get a strong name, but it was actually prophetic in a sense, because Nebuchadnezzar became arguably one of the, perhaps a handful of most powerful, eminent leaders this planet has known. When he reigned in Babylonia, he literally ruled the world, they say, if you read up about him. And so he was the king of Babylon. Babylon was a city they established on the river Euphrates, so the river kind of flowed through it. Nebuchadnezzar is also known for what they call one of the seven ancient wonders of the world, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. So he designed all these beautiful gardens in a city that was, in a sense, unrivaled at that stage, the city of Babylon. And Babylon and kind of grew and expanded, and it kind of became this Babylonian. Babylonia literally extended to the known world. So he basically ruled over the world for about 40 years. And his father had gone and conquered Assyria and sacked the city of Nineveh. And Nebuchadnezzar, in a sense, was used by God to judge God's people. So remember the Old Testament and the Old Testament prophets prophesied to Israel and Judah, in a sense, that if you don't turn from your sin, I'm going to judge you, and you're basically going to go into exile. This was the instrument God used to judge Judah. Israel was judged by the Assyrian kings, but the Babylonian king, specifically Nebuchadnezzar, was used to judge Judah. So twice they rebelled to him, and they say Nebuchadnezzar was an extremely brutal king. So he went in there, and he sorted them out. They rebelled against him again, Judah's second king. And he went and he basically took them all and destroyed the temple in Jerusalem, basically cleared out everything, and he took them all into exile into Babylon. That's where those songs, by the river of Babylon, we sat down. So there were songs of remorse, songs of heartache and despair that were sung basically by Judah, by God's people, because of what this man did to them. So he was a brutal king. He was a brutal king. He was a very, very harsh king. I actually read something about that Tim Keller wrote about him, and he said, he spoke about the masters of the universe. You know, I don't know if you ever remember that story about He-Man and the masters of the universe. But some of the older people, like, I got that for Christmas once. I wouldn't buy that for my kids these days. But I got He-Man and the Masters of the Universe with Skeletor. He was quite scary, and like this purple panther. But basically, Tim Keller describes Nebuchadnezzar as one of those guys that literally was one of the masters of the universe, so to speak, masters of that time. So very, very powerful man. I'm just trying to give you some context of the guy we're going to analyze this morning in the context of pride and humility. And so God uses him to judge his own people, but then God judges Nebuchadnezzar. So let's pick up that first scripture there. And I call it Letters from a Senile King, and you'll understand just now why I said that. So Nebuchadnezzar, in the book of Daniel was one of the prophets that was around Daniel and Ezekiel at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. They were around there in Babylon. And so they're kind of documenting this whole story for us about Nebuchadnezzar and what he did to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel chapter 3. In chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar is actually writing to us. So I'm calling it letters from this king. He's saying, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth. He's basically addressing all the earth because he rules all the earth. Peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid. And the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore, I issued a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Let's just stay here for a second. So he's writing this letter basically to the whole world. And he's saying, I've got something to tell you about God. That is the Most High God, and that He's worked wonders for me. He signs how great and how mighty He is. He's got this kingdom that's everlasting. His dominion is from generation to generation. This is a secular king that's writing this. And the reason that he's writing this is because he's just been through an ordeal. And he's just learned an extremely hard lesson. He's trying to communicate that truth to the whole world at that stage. And he's saying, I was basically doing fine. I was flourishing in my palace. I was resting. There was nothing wrong. And then I got this dream. And it troubled me. And I called all this important, smart people, clever people in my nation, or in the world. And I tried to let them explain to me what this dream meant. And none of them could tell me except this man called Daniel. Not from Babylon. And so Daniel basically tells him what the interpretation of the dream is. And the dream is about this massive tree that's like literally high to the heavens. And there's lots of things like resting birds, resting, and it's giving shade to a lot of things. And there's beasts that are basically resting under it. And it says that basically the whole kind of ecosystem, everything was kind of being nourished and fed from this tree. And then a voice goes out in heaven, the Holy One Christ, that says, chop down the tree, but leave the roots in. And nobody can understand the dream. And Daniel, in fear and trembling, explains to Nebuchadnezzar, O king, you are the tree. And you're going to be chopped down in a very significant way. But your roots will remain, and you will be restored at a late stage. And so Nebuchadnezzar, the interesting thing is, God warns Judah and says, I'm going to judge you. And they don't listen, and he uses Nebuchadnezzar to execute his judgment. Daniel warns Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar doesn't listen. And God judges him. And so let's go to that next slide quickly. And so a bit later, Daniel's writing and says, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of the 12 months. So for 12 months, he's walking around. He's got the warning, he's doing nothing about it. He's walking about the royal palace of Babylon. Listen to what he says. The king spoke, saying, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? Okay? Quite a lot of my's in there. While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And so he's walking around, and rightfully so, he's surveying everything that he has kind of, in a sense, decreed. So technically, it is him that's put this stuff in place, that's built this massive city, that's done these hanging gardens, that's built a city like nobody else has probably built up to that stage. But notice his words. Is this not the great Babylon that I have built for my majesty? Okay? Daniel says, and they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. And seven times, the scholars are saying, 7 years shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whoever he chooses. Next slide. That very hour, God's not wasting time there. That very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, and his hair had grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. Let's just give this some context. We talk about a global leader. Probably the one that used to speak first at the G4 summit or the G8 summit in those days. Okay, so we're talking about a very strong global leader. Everybody knows this leader. He's a strong leader. He's a mighty leader. He's a successful leader. And God judges him and he goes insane for 7 years. Imagine a current leader being judged so hectically that he loses his mind. Imagine Donald Trump running off into the forests for 7 years. I think some of us would be happy because then he would stay away from Twitter. But imagine one of the global leaders right now that we are, you know, I don't know, Theresa May or Donald Trump or one of the global Angela Merkel, Putin. Johnny wants to put it to run into the forest. Imagine one of the global leaders right now disappears for 7 years. They send him to an asylum. He loses his mind completely. So much so that it's not like he can even function among humans. In those days, he literally, it's not like the Bible's using metaphors. He went and ate grass like an animal for 7 years. And he was unrecognizable. He completely lost his mind. From the man who's just kind of ruled the world to the man that we are reading about here. And so let's read about his comeback. His comeback and his conclusion. So after 7 years, the Lord restores him and his mind comes back to him. At the same time, he says, my reason returned to me. And for the glory of my kingdom, my majesty and splendor returned to me. My counselors and my Lord sought me, and I was established in my kingdom. So God reestablishes him, and still more greatness was added to me. Now look at these words. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven. For all his works are right, and his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. Those who walk in pride, he's able to humble. If there ever was a proud man that learned a hard lesson and wrote something that we should learn from around pride, it's Nebuchadnezzar. And so, there are a couple of things I want to unpack around pride this morning. Firstly, what is the big problem with pride? What is so bad about pride? Apart from the fact that Paul says that love is not proud. Why should we be weary and averse of pride? Psalm 10 verse 4 says, in his pride, the wicked man does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. You see, when you are in pride, normally when you're in pride, you don't even know that you're in pride. But when you are in significant pride, there's so much of you in the room that there's no more room for God in your life. That's when you start declaring things like, let me just survey everything that I have made for my majesty. And you forget about the God who thought you up, who fashioned you, who gave you those gifts, those talents, those abilities, who blessed your parents that you had money to go to that university, to get that degree so that you get that job, to meet that guy so that you would get to the position you eventually get. So we just shift God out of the room and we say it was me and it was I. And so the room becomes a bit small for both you and God. So that's the problem with pride. In pride, wicked men do not seek him. We forget about God. And it becomes about us and our achievements. And in all our thoughts, we stop thinking about God, because there's no more room for God, because everything is full of ourselves. Proverbs 16:18-19, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Pride comes before destruction. Yet Solomon is telling us, we've been told, pride normally comes for ichamurs. When you see destruction, when you see carnage, very often you can go backtrack just slightly and you will find pride before that. And a haughty spirit before a fall. What is that word haughty? I didn't quite know exactly what haughty means. Haughty means when you think you're superior to somebody else. I thought it means when as you could ophaar, you gather a whole lot of things. And then I thought, let me just go and double check this whole haughty thing. Haughty things is when you put yourself in your eyes above, specifically above other people, and you think, I am superior to those people. Okay? So I'm saying, better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Let's go to that next slide. So it's just one more thing I want to read for you. D.L. Moody said, God sends no one away empty except those who are full of themselves. And God sends no one away empty except those who are full of themselves. We're going to the next one. I'll speak to you just for a second about glory. Next slide, Kelly. Why do we struggle with this issue of pride? Remember, we're speaking about pride, the pitfalls of pride, the fact that love is not proud. We need to be known for love. So we need to eliminate this thing in our lives. Why do we struggle with pride? See, pride very often is linked to glory. Pride is linked to glory. And let's face it, we are born sinful. And so we all want a bit of glory at some stage in our life. Let's look at the definition of glory. High renown or honor won by notable achievements. That sounds, I'll have some more of that, please. Synonyms include renown, fame, prestige, honor, distinction, eminence, preeminence, acclaim, acclamation, celebrity, praise, laurels, recognition, repute, reputation, name, illustrious, luster, shining. That's what glory means. And so from a young age, you know, if you go to that next slide, I'm going to pick on the soccer players for a second, yeah? Look, I enjoy all kinds of sports, and I love soccer as well. But I think there are many, many young boys that grow up all over the world with posters up against their walls or watching the telly and saying, Messi, one day I want to run around in that massive stadium and where I score the goal. I want the glory. You know what I'm saying? I want to do like those soccer players and slide into the corner and beat my chest and say, just pour it on. Just. Glory. Glory. What do we do with glory? What do we do with glory? Is glory necessarily a wrong thing? I suppose it's where you put glory and who you give it to. See, it's different if Messi is realizing, and I don't know Messi's story at all, but it's different when a guy realizes, man, you know, I am just here because of God's grace and goodness. He gave me the ability to kick a ball like that. And so when the moment of glory comes and the whole world is ready to pour praise onto Messi, those men are tested in that moment. What do they do with their glory? And I'm not saying they have trained for 20, 30 years harder than anybody else. They have worked hard to score the incredible goals and play football like these guys. I'm not denying that. They have worked hard. They have stewarded their gifts to the nth degree. They have worked hard for that. But what do they do with the glory? Because glory can either look like that, but it can also look like the next slide. Wade Van Niekerk smashing the world record at the Olympics. And so the media didn't know what to do with Wade Van Niekerk. Because in his moment, where all the glory should have been his, he's standing to heaven and he's giving the glory to God. And so it's very interesting to read his first few statements and his first few interviews after he made history in the world. And so we know what happens when Wayne Van Ecker, who half of us, if we're to be honest, did not have a clue who he was before the Olympics. It was Rio, right? Rio only won gold and won all the medals. Goodness, someone who still doesn't seem to know who Wayne Van Ecker was. Wayne Van Ecker, he's a South African who smashed Michael Johnson's record. So it's so interesting. I'm on this WhatsApp group with my race friends. And man, the WhatsApp group and social media is exploding with commentary and praise for this Wade Finnick. And all of a sudden, it's like, yo, man, I knew Wade when we were in school together. And I actually grew up with him. You know, remember the definition of pride? It's when you glory in your own achievements or those closely to relate to. So all of a sudden, it's like, yo, man, you know, I was Wade's coach when he was 2 months old, and I actually taught him to run. He said he actually didn't walk first, he ran first. And so we're all latched on, and my WhatsApp group is just exploding. As you know, it's just like this patriotism that's arising. You know, we're all of a sudden all South Africans, and you know, Wade has done it for us. And the guys, in a sense of, they're sharing with his glory. It's so tempting because it's such a nice thing. Remember that our feeling of, it's a nice thing. Pride is nice. Glory is nice. Yeah, glory is even better. And so we see Wade's response. He tweets, I don't know what just happened. All I can say is that it was God. So I copy that little image and I post it on the WhatsApp group, and the WhatsApp group goes silent. Mostly unsaved guys. About 100 of us, 80 of us. And it goes silent. Because we're not used to, in moments when the glory should be ours, diverting it. We're not used to that. When it's time to shine, we take the shine. And so you find very few people like Wade Finnegan. Very few. That's a humble man. It's a humble man we've seen there. I don't know what he's doing these days, but how he handled that situation, when literally the world's cameras were on him, he could have said anything. Man, he did thank his coach, but he could have taken a lot of glory and chose not to. You know, my brother, I don't speak about them often, but my one brother's a little bit like this. His name's James. He appears. You know James. Now James is a golfer, just like he did. And James, you know, he's worked really hard to make it kind of in the coaching industry, you know, here in the Western Cape and in South Africa. But he never tells us as a family about his achievements. And so I get a WhatsApp from another guy called Jimmy, who's in the Somerset West Church, and he's a golfer. He said, congratulations on your brother's achievement. I'm like, what achievement? No, your brother was just, nominated best professional golf pro in the Western Cape. Wow, sure, so I contact my brother, congratulations. He's like, oh, that's fine. He doesn't tell us, he takes a friend from another church to tell me about my brother, what my brother's doing in golf. A few months later, I hear via the grapevine that he's now actually the top coach in the country, voted the top coach in the country. Basically in his profession. So, again, in a moment where everything he's been working for his whole life comes to fruition, and he kind of reaches the pinnacle of what a coach works for in this country, my brother doesn't even tell his family. And I know him. It's not because he's got false pride in him. He's got genuine humility. He's got no need to pour any glory or anything on himself. And so we have to find out from friends and other family members about what he's having. We watch on the TV if he plays golf. He doesn't tell us. It's because he does. It's not because he doesn't communicate. He communicates a lot of other things. But around the stuff that he gets right, he doesn't communicate. And that always inspires me. I'm like, man, that's humility. Because I tell you, if I've been working for 20 years in the coaching industry, it's not like he's working for the prize, but when he gets the prize and they say to him, you're the top coach in this country, go to Mauritius and enjoy it with your family. You know, I think I'm going to be tempted to tell somebody. Hey? And now I want to speak to us just for a second about social media and Facebook. People, if there was ever a platform where it's tempting to post the glory shots, not the bad and the embarrassing stuff and the stuff that you're struggling with or the ugly pictures. I'm also guilty. There was ever a platform for us to put the best foot forward and to catch a bit of shine. It's now available. It's not like the newspapers need to come anymore and take a photo and write an article about this amazing person. You can do it yourself now. Be careful. Be careful of stuff like social media. I'm not saying don't post the amazing things. I'm just saying, let's be honest. Let's be honest. I love it when people are honest on Facebook. Got a few friends and she writes amazing stuff about the family, but then sometimes she will write about how she's struggling, whatever. You know, this one lady's writing, struggling, how she can't wear skinny jeans, you know, she doesn't have the figure for it. And then she just encourages the ladies, you don't have to look like the models. You know what I'm saying? There's a bit of honesty and truth that's also going around. Humility is anchored in a good understanding of honesty. Let's be careful how we engage in stuff like social media. Okay, we're nearly done. Next slide. I remind us, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. Does not boast. This thing that we're really trying to understand, this love, it's not proud. It's not proud. Final slide. What are the cures for pride? Good people, I've been repenting all week. As I've read all these scriptures and I've been reflecting on oh my goodness. I've been repenting all. Pride is such a subtle thing. You think you don't have it, but if you look carefully enough, it rears its ugly head. How do we cure pride? How do we get rid of pride? How do we live out love that's void of this thing called pride? The first thing is Jesus teaches us. He says, give it away. Give the glory away. You know it. At the end of the Lord's Prayer, he's saying all the glory, all the honor, all the power, all the glory, all the glory. Not 99%, not 99.9%, all the glory, Lord, is yours. You see, as Christians, it's not like we sometimes steal the glory because we know better than that. We don't go to steal God's glory, but sometimes we're tempted to share in His glory. So when something amazing happens here in church or these worship leaders, we battled with this, and the people come up to you afterwards and they say, oh man, the worship was amazing. You say, thank you, I know it was. But Jason doesn't say it. Okay. But those are battles that worship leaders or pastors or anybody that's around doing God things. Maybe you're running an NGO and somebody says, you know, you're doing amazing work, and just for a moment you're tempted to share in God's glory. The word says, all the glory belongs to Him. So how do we deal with pride? We send the glory upwards. We deflect it. There's such a beautiful picture. I remember we were speaking to CS and the guys, we were about standing about 30 of us around in a circle. We honored Him for the work He'd done in Stellenbosch. And in that moment where He could have received the glory, I'll never forget, it just went like this. He pointed at heaven. Just pointed at heaven. And He deflected the glory to the Lord where it belongs. The first thing is we give it away. The second thing is you can boast. The word says boast in God all day long. Boast in the Lord. Jeremiah has got such a beautiful challenge here. He says, let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. Let's think about that for a second. Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. Those sitting with doctor's degrees here, just remember who gave you that brain. Who gave you the opportunity. This is the big thing. When you think you're going to be haughty and superior, just remember the opportunities that you got in life. When you just tend to think I'm smarter or better than that person. Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom, or the strong man boast in his strength. Let not the rich man boast in his riches. Let the humble come and give thanks. And let him who boasts boast in this, that he knows the Lord. That's what we boast in. You want to boast about something? The word says, go for it. Boast in the Lord. Boast in Jesus. That's why praise and worship is so important. It destroys pride. Worship means to bow down. I want to encourage you. I'm going to be doing a bit of bowing down. Just a bow down. You humble yourself when you bow down. That's the first way we deal and we get cured from pride, is we boast in the Lord and we give the glory away. Then Peter's saying, you want to know how to deal with pride? He says, put something on. Put on humility. That means you need to put it on. Because if you're not going to put it on, at some stage, if you carry on in that pride, God will humble you. That's the other side of this coin. We're encouraged to clothe ourselves in humility, which means we sort ourselves out. Okay? We sort ourselves out when it comes to pride. Peter's saying, humble yourself. You humble yourself under the almighty hand of God. Always see this picture of this massive hand, you know, it's just like, okay, Lord, I'll do it. I'll go down. Because when you come, the picture looks a bit more scary. And we learn from this, it's like Nebuchadnezzar. Don't let the Lord have to humble you. And he'll be faithful, just like he warned Nebuchadnezzar, just like he warned his own people. He'll warn you about pride in your life. And there's some of us sitting here this morning, you've been warned. You've been warned, and the Lord said, I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with the way you think. When you're around those people, you think you're better than them. Humble yourself, clothe yourself. And the last cure we find, here Paul writes in Romans 12, who do you associate with? Associate with the humble. Do not be haughty. We've seen what haughty means. It means to feel that you're superior. The other definitions of haughty is snobbish, high-minded, and exclusive. Who do you associate with? I'm not saying who are you friends with. The Lord's not telling us who we can be friends with. But he's saying, it's a problem. When you go into a certain environment, there's certain people there, and you think, I'm above these people. And guys, this problem is amplified in a country like South Africa. Where we're sitting with the highest disparities and the highest inequalities still in the world. And I'm not going to make this morning sermon a race issue, because pride is not a race issue. You find pride in a plucker's camp, where somebody thinks my shack is better than your shack, and you actually don't belong because your shack is not up to scratch. And you find pride in the smartest estates, where somebody's not driving the latest 4x4, and you think you're better than them because we're actually driving the latest 4x4. Pride is relative. It knows no racial boundaries. It crosses all of those things. And so hear me now this morning. I'm not saying pride is a racial issue. It can be. But first and foremost, it's just how do you view and associate around others. I know it's getting quiet in here. These are heavy topics. But the Lord wants us to deal with this because he wants us to understand love. And to understand love, we must understand pride. But more important, we must know the absence of pride in our midst. Close with this. If we want to know how to deal with pride, let's look at Jesus. Let's just reflect on the one who actually has all the glory, on the one who's praised and worshipped from the beginning of time to the end of eternity. If there was anybody that deserves the glory, God sends Himself, the Triune God sends Himself to come and dwell amongst us mere mortals for 33 years. And He doesn't send Him into earth on a spaceship or a limo with aircon. And Jesus doesn't get born in the Mediclinic with the best facilities of that time. And He doesn't get born in an important city where you think maybe Jesus should be born in New York or London or some important place. He gets born on the wrong side of the railway tracks. He gets born in Bethlehem, which is some small, little, obscure city. And He's a Nazarene. And the people say, can anything good come out of Nazareth? He didn't come from the right place. He wasn't educated at the right place. In fact, the people that He hung around with were toothless fishermen that had no education, that when eventually they preach in Acts, the people marvel because they realize these are uneducated men that are saying these things, and now the Spirit of God is in this place. So they marvel at God because they realize they have been with Jesus. Jesus was humble. When He makes His triumphant entry into the city of Jerusalem, He comes on a donkey. I think if I was there and I was like the PR manager of the campaign, it's like, this is the entry, this is the entry of the kingdom. Jesus, you're not coming in on a donkey. I mean, that's downgrading. You know, that's like, that's beneath the King of Kings. And then finally, goes and he chooses to hang on the cross for us. Right? Jesus was humble. That's our example as the band comes up. That's the example that we follow this morning. Sing the chorus of that very song, the holy song, in the way we go. All of the people. Jason introduced a new song this morning. I didn't even realize what the words were. I said he could introduce it, but it's called All of the Glory. It's called All of the Glory. As we were worshiping through it, I just realized, okay. Lord wants us to sing about it as well. The fact that we give all the glory to the Lord. So let's just stand this morning. Yeah. I said this last time. We're busy with a series called Hearts Under Construction. And I know some of you have probably said, Richard, please, we need less challenging messages. And I know this morning was a hard one. And I'm nearly done. I'm nearly done with these messages. And the Lord is nearly done with our hearts. This morning was, it's a big operation the Lord is doing on our hearts. But He's doing it because He loves us. So we're going to be focusing on a whole lot of other things in the next while. We're going to be focusing on getting equipped for soul winning, getting equipped for salvation, getting equipped to bring the halves. That's where we're going. So I keep on saying that to you. Just hang in there. We're on the operating table. He's nearly done with us. One of our leaders shared a picture or story with me. When her and her husband came into church, probably about a year ago. It's amazing when you come into a town like this, from another place in the country. For a while, you can see things clearly. You see how this town is different. You see how the people are different. You see, in a sense, the spiritual atmosphere is also different. And different powers and principalities are dominant in different areas. She just shared with me that there were a couple, there were about three or four strongholds that she saw immediately as she came into the Valley of Franschhoek. Things that hold us and bind us as people here. And one of them was pride. So guys, we're up against something here in the spirit that's been around probably longer than many of us have been alive. But that's fine, because Jesus has been around longer than that, and he's more victorious. And every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall confess, and every power and principality is subject to Jesus. So pride, even though it may have a foothold in this valley, it still needs to bow to the name and the authority of Jesus. But what we're starting with this morning is we're starting with us. So Holy Spirit, I thank you. We thank you for your word, Jesus. Thank you that you bring an operating knife into theater this morning, Lord. I just pray for boldness for every person here that, like me, has struggled and struggles with pride from time to time. And in your love, I pray that you would come and cut out and remove everything, Lord, that tempts us to go to that place of haughtiness, to think we are better. Lord, when everything that we are and have done and have achieved, Lord, is from your hand. And so may we be like those, Lord, that reflect glory, that are not tempted to even steal or share glory, but that simply reflect it up to heaven, where it's due. And so I pray just for boldness for each person. Let's just for 20 seconds, let's just be honest with the Lord. Let's just get quiet before him. And you ask the Holy Spirit, is there any place he needs to come in and shine his torch in your life where there may be a bit of pride? Just allow him to do that for a second. So while every eye is closed, I'm going to challenge us this morning. My wife often says, don't waste a good crisis. Let's do this properly this morning. If you, while every eye is closed, if you recognize pride in your life, I want you to be bold this morning. I'm already at the front because I'm responding to the altar call. I'm here already. I've been repenting all week. If you've recognized anything this morning, if the Holy Spirit has touched anything in your heart this morning, I want you to do what Peter said. Humble yourself. Clothe yourself with humility. If that's you this morning, just raise your hand and say, that's me. I need prayer. I need to humble myself. Thank you. There are lots of hands going up, but I'm going to call you out. Let's do this problem. Let's come to the front this morning. We're going to pray for each other. We're going to pray for each other. Come to the front. We're going to have some facilitators, the small group leaders here. We're just going to anoint each other. We're just going to minister to each other this morning. We'll ask the ladies to pray with the ladies, the men with the men. So we have an opportunity this morning to respond. We have an opportunity to respond. This is significant because it's symbolic. It's symbolic of those that have been convicted to step out of their comfort zone and come to the front. So thank you, guys. Thank you for your humility this morning, because the Lord can work with us. And what I'm actually going to ask us to do is take one step further. Those that can, if we can just bend our knees, just as a sign of humility this morning. Jason, if you could lead us, the rest of us, quietly in the song. The rest of you, I encourage you, you don't need to sit down. You can stand and worship the Lord while we're going to pray and minister to these people. If I could just ask the leaders to pray one-on-one with our people up here. Leaders, if you could come to the front. Thanks, Jason.
Worthy of my joy. So worthy of